Hey, good day, everyone. I'm Robert Sparrow with the Viral Volley Podcast, and we are kicking off, can't even say kicking off 2021 because we've got an end of the year special, kind of beginning of 2021 edition of College Volleyball Weekly. And I am excited to announce one of our newest members of the Collegiate Consortium of Coaching Intelligence. That's Pepperdine head coach David Hunt, who's representing the Left Coast. And then if you look up left in your screen, you know Jay Hossick of George Mason, and he's not wearing the prominently GMU gear quite yet, but he will. Oh, just a little Adidas as well. And then the Miva Monster program of Dan Friend and Lewis University with no mask on, which I'm kind of surprised. We were hoping for Boba Fett or the Mandalorian, who's been kind of trending lately. So thanks a lot, gentlemen, for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Hey, a lot of stuff to talk about. And unfortunately, we got to start on the negative side of things. And it's not even regards to what we're going through right now called this pandemic that we seem to be severely affected by. But we'll get to that. But one of the big news that occurred at the end of the 2020 season, April-ish, was the announcement of, or actually in July, was Stanford's last season of competition to be the 2021 season. And wanted to get your thoughts on what happened, but I'm going to go through some bullet points of some of the key facts that Stanford made the decision in July 29, 2020 to eliminate 11 varsity programs, citing financial toll of pandemic. The Wellendale University says it's facing a $70 million shortfall over the next 3 years. Though the savings for cutting the sports over the next is of the cutting the sports is relatively minimal. The programs ranging from synchronized swimming to wrestling have produced 20 national championships, 27 Olympic medalists. Men's volleyball team alone had 10 Olympians. So with that, I wanted to get you guys' thoughts. And I'll start from left and then go left to right and down. So Jay Hossick from George Mason, thoughts on the Stanford situation?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, we're now a few months removed from that decision, and there's been a lot of, moving pieces behind the scenes trying to make it happen to bring it back. The unfortunate situation is it just doesn't sound like the AD is really willing to play ball with anybody, and no pun intended. And it's a real sad state for men's volleyball in general. I think a lot of people will knee-jerk it and say, oh, it's Title IX, it's COVID, it's this and that. I don't know what the actual reason was, but the bottom line is this: you have a prestigious university with a ginormous endowment claiming that they are having a money shortfall from the COVID issue. And I think anybody with a big time athletic program such as Stanford, when you have football not being able to play all of their games and have, butts in the stands and all that income, those are the programs that seem to take the biggest hits. And I'm not saying that Dan and Dave and myself are lucky and don't have any issues. We all have issues of our own to deal with. But I think when you deal with big time athletic programs that are on the national scale like that, football is a big issue. It's a big challenge. And when you're normally raking, $50, $60, $70 million a year off that team, and now all of a sudden you're only making $5 million, you can see where the budgets take a little bit more of a hit than others. But I am super disappointed that we lost a program that has such a storied tradition in history. And guys are losing a program to play for, coaches are losing a job and a career. It's a real bummer. So
how about you, Dan? Anything to add too?
I certainly agree with Jay. I think the funny piece is they made money this year, the school did, and upwards of $2 billion still. So I just don't think we know all the facts and everything that's going on, unfortunately. And that's the sad point. And I think there's more going on than just, hey, we need to save some money with 11 sports. I think there's some different views from the president down to the AD and the board of trustees and what they're wanting to do, and not understanding the full impact of however many student athletes between these 11 sports. And that's really unfortunate because they really, what were some more key sports that they cut from them at the same time. And so it's unfortunate. I think the rally cry from the volleyball community in general, as well as even athletes on other sports there at Stanford, has been great. First Point Volleyball has been huge with the Save the Stanford campaign and everything they're doing. They've raised a lot of money. I don't know. I'm still crossing my fingers that everything that everybody's doing will somehow help down the road with these programs and these kids and somehow save it. So,
David Hunt from Pepperdine University. Thoughts being your colleague in the MPSF.
Yeah, first topic I get to hit on. Real good one there, Rob. So that's good.
right under the bus. I don't waste any time.
I know. That's good. I mean, it hit close to home. I mean, I found out from our AD that morning, you know, we were having a head coach's call at Pepperdine and we were talking scheduling and he brought up Stanford to me individually. And I thought, you know, he was trying to talk about, hey, we want you to bus up to Stanford instead of flying. So I'm thinking, you know, how am I going to maneuver this conversation? And all of a sudden he goes, hey, you don't know, but Stanford announced they're dropping men's volleyball or 11 sports and men's volleyball is one of them. I mean, it starts to have conversations now. The MPSF a few years ago was 12 teams and now we're down to six. So that gets to a dangerous number. And I think the thought is if Stanford, yes, size of their athletic department, you know, the reputation of their athletic department, if they're going to drop men's volleyball, does this open the door for other universities? So I think there's a lot of fear. I think there's a lot of wake up calls to coaches to engage their alumni. I think Costi's done a great job, at least in our MPSF meetings, about here's what I've learned through this process. Even if it doesn't save my program, maybe it can help save yours. So then there's been a lot of those conversations. It's opened the door to fundraising conversations. I know MPSF coaches have got on calls together and talked about ways, creative ways to fundraise and build support. And John Spraw has been a strong advocate of, now as an Olympic coach, it's not just your job to train your team and recruit, but it's also to raise money. And I was lucky enough to have somebody in a position before me. He was in the same position as well with Al, but you know, those two people saw men's volleyball grow immensely and they put us in a good position. So now John's trying to carry that forward and saying, I think we all need to do that.
Yeah. Well, more on the micro level, focusing on the people in the game, how does this impact the players that are at Stanford and the decision-making they have to make in the next, or actually for the rest of their careers? And we'll start with Dan on this one.
It'd be interesting. I think a few of those guys, like if you read Justin Liu's piece about, you know, he's going to finish his degree and then he's going to go back up to Canada and maybe play a couple of years college there and work on his master's while he's doing national team. I think there's a lot of different pathways for these guys. And with COVID, they got a year back. So you may see some of these guys, you know, Jalen try to go play a year, he's doing a master's or something, or some of these pieces with some of these guys. And then you've seen some of the younger guys already look, whether they were incoming recruits and they're going to Harvard now or doing some different things, they're trying to, you know, figure out what the best pathway. And certainly Stanford's an excellent education. So I think those guys are kind of stuck. Some of them are like, hey, I got to stay here and get this great education because ultimately that's what's going to put me in a great spot, or am I chasing volleyball in a different pathway? And I would imagine that 70 to 80% of them are going to finish out their degree if they're in a spot to do it already, because why wouldn't you at a great institution like that? So
how about you, Jay?
Yeah, I agree with Dan. I also think, you know, that there's some other programs that are going to reap the benefits should any of those kids leave. And I would assume that obviously your scholarship that was offered to you, if it's your first year, and let's just say it was a half ride, I would assume that that would be honored throughout your career. So for anybody who gets in there and you know, all of a sudden recognizes, hey, volleyball maybe wasn't going to be my be all end all afterwards, but I have a half scholarship to go to Stanford. I'd be real hard pressed to see anybody not want to take advantage of that. So I think there'll be a majority of them will probably stay and finish their career. Obviously it's going to be a windfall for other programs of high educational caliber like Harvard and Princeton, which just makes our conference better. So I'm happy about that. And, you know, but at the same time, you know, it's just a real shocker that some of those kids are not going to be able to ever get a chance to play for Stanford.
Yeah. How about you, David? Anything to add on what they've said already?
Yeah. And I mean, we could touch on this as we talk maybe in some schedules or some 2021 scheduling, but I feel bad. I mean, Santa Clara County right now in California is probably one of the most restrictive. You're seeing the 49ers can't even play NFL games at their home stadium. So I know Stanford has bumped back their start date. They were supposed to start a while ago, right around the end of Thanksgiving. Then it was end of December. Now it's end of January. So the university isn't doing these guys any favors. So I think like both these coaches brought up, you know, do these guys even want to go back and compete for the university this year, or has the way it's been handled sort of left a sour taste in their mouth? So what does their last year of competition even look like? Which is sad to think about all these, you know, players and all these different stories that come out of that program. And now this is the year that ends it. It's sort of a bummer. But I know that Coffey has been vocal about whatever's best for these athletes is what he supports. I mean, it just speaks to his character and sort of how he's handled it all. So,
yeah. Well, Coach Coffey is an incredible person and human being. And that was the first thought when all this announcement came out, what are he and his staff going to do? And actually doing some research, apparently they're going to honor his contract and they offered severance pay. Not that that's a good thing for the coaching staff, but how about from a coach's perspective, what happens there for those people if this doesn't go through? So we'll start with you this time on this one, Jay.
So, yeah, I mean, I've been thinking about that because, you know, we're all one bad thing away from having to find dusting off our resume. So the challenge, I think, is where are you in your coaching career? Are you established enough that you have been there long enough to have a retirement that gives you what you need? And then you can kind of maybe do something for fun on the side as you ride out into the sunset. And I mean, with all due respect. Or are you young enough and still hungry and wanting to go out and need to make more income? And I think, you know, let's just say that you're an older coach that's established, you know, you kind of get a chance to maybe change direction a little bit, or maybe get more involved with local clubs if you still want to coach and get the itch, you know, satisfied. But you're no longer concerned with making money on that. You're just doing it because you love it. And I think that's a real great option if you are financially able to do that. But if you're a young coach, you know, there's really two directions you go. You either go to the women's side, and there's always opportunities and there's always a place for somebody to land. May not be at the highest level that you want. You have to start. You kind of have to start over again from scratch, so to speak. But, you know, over time, you can bounce up and move, make it work. Or do you maybe, you know, take a head job with a men's program that's at a lower level just because it's a head job and that's what you really want to do? And, you know, the question then is, can you make it work financially? And then all of a sudden you got to talk about doing club and you got to talk about maybe doing a second or third job. And that's a lot, you know, especially when you didn't have to do that for so many years. So I think that's the two directions that I would think about.
How about you, David? Go back down to you and then up to Dan.
Yeah. I think Jay hit it on the head, right? I mean, where are you at? And then you mix in your family. I know, you know, in John's situation, he has a family that he's got to worry about. I think we've all seen coaching friends have to make those tough decisions. It's not as easy as here's my ambition as a coach. Here's what I'm going to go do. A lot of times there's other people involved in those. So I mean, as friends and colleagues, I hope that they get to do whatever they hope they want to do or go into whatever they want to do. It's tough, you know, and you don't wish that upon anybody.
Yeah. How about you, Dan?
Super talented coaching staff. I mean, Costa's been around a long time. Shibuya's won a national championship, D3. And Daniel is really talented as well. But, Daniel's got two little ones. The whole staff's super talented. If they want to coach, they're not going to have a problem landing a job. I think it's everything that the guys just talked about what's their family dynamic. And, you know, maybe one of the wives or significant others are the breadwinners and they don't have to do much at all. I don't know some of those situations. And so I think, but from purely a coaching and personality standpoint, none of those guys have a difficult time being successful in another job setting, whether it be coaching or anything. So,
yeah. All right. Next topic. We actually went backwards on the timeline here. We went to July to April, which is the NCAA waiver of minimum requirement by the FBS schools, or if you're not familiar with that, that's the football bowl subdivision schools. If you're not familiar with that situation, I'll just read the quote here that I got pulled from an ESPN article. This is a quote from the director of the board. As you are aware, the COVID-19 pandemic and resultant economic turmoil has resulted in a direct financial crisis for higher education since at least the Great Depression. The Group of Five commissioners wrote, among the financial challenges being faced include significant decreases in state appropriations, substantial losses in endowment value, a downturn in philanthropic activity, an already trying environment for enrollment is expected to see even more sizable reductions, not to mention the continuing trend in deep reductions in the enrollment of international students. Finally, all this playing out with no ability to predict when normal operations might resume. So with this request to waive this minimum program requirement, which means a lot of the Olympic sports were on the chopping block, for this proposal. I wanted to get your guys' thoughts on this proposal, and thank goodness it didn't go through. It was voted through John Sprague and Kathy DeBoer, the AVCA, got a bunch of people together to get the petition signed, get over, I believe it's 10,000 within a period of 3 days to sign the petition, and then they voted against it. But what were your guys' thoughts on this when it came about? And we'll start with David on this one.
Yeah, you know, anytime I hear topics about this, obviously, you know, we coach volleyball. I'm not an administrator. A lot of these, when you look at the details of the proposals, there's a lot of different language in there. So I usually talk to some people in administration that I know, and I was a little bit conflicted. Obviously, I saw what the AVCA was saying, and I support that 100%. Don't cut, you know, Olympic sports, and don't use the pandemic as an excuse to do that. But from what some administrators that I was talking to were saying was, hey, they were just looking for a waiver so that they didn't have to sponsor for 1 year. They just didn't know what sponsorships would look like in terms of travel. A lot of people don't know there's a minimum number of matches that we all have to play for our sport team and count. So they were saying they don't know what that looks like. They didn't know if the NCAA was going to push fall sports to the spring. There was just so much unknown, so they were trying to get ahead of that. But I think it got some negative backlash, obviously, because people jumped to the deepest, darkest of, you know, they want to get rid of everything. I think the reality is a lot of these universities are over those minimums anyway. So if they want to get rid of somebody, they're going to get rid of somebody. But yeah, I think at the end of the day, there's other ways to go about what they were trying to accomplish. And I think you're seeing that now. I think a lot of waivers have been passed. You hear about these blanket waivers about now there's no sport minimums. Or contest minimums, at least for men's volleyball. I think to get to the tournament, they've dropped the number by half. I think it's like 10 or something now. So I think they were able to accomplish what they were looking at, if that's actually what they were looking for, in some other ways.
Yeah. How about you, Dan?
I mean, Dave hit a lot of it, but I think I just didn't like the knee-jerk thing. It's like, March, we just got April, COVID's happening, nobody has a clue what's going on, and we're already trying to do some waiver. I'm like, wait, can you give a little bit of time to figure out what we really need versus, you know, hey, I got to make a statement about something or move something. I don't know. I thought it was knee jerk, which unfortunately I think the NCAA does a handful of times, which we all know, you know what I mean? Some of that stuff. So, and it was good that the powers to be, Kathy and John and First Point, all those people rallied a lot of people just to have a voice about, hey, let's wait before we make any types of decisions on this stuff. And
yeah.
It reminds me of the whole financial committee thing too, which isn't a topic on here right now, but the thing about change some stuff, and
we could make it a topic.
Boy, that disappeared too. Do you know what I mean? Just with COVID happening and everything. And so, but you again saw the rally of volleyball come forward, which was really great in terms of that. And so, but you guys can see there's been a ton of sports already cut.
Yeah.
You know? Across the board, and you know, whether it's swimming or gymnastics or even soccer or things like that, we've seen, you know. But I also think the model for college institutions is bad right now, you know what I mean? And it's exposing it, and unless you're or student tuition driven school, you can really be struggling if you've overextended yourself and you're just expecting money from football and basketball. You're really seeing that model get exploited quite bad right now.
So about you, Jay, anything else to add?
Yeah, no, I would agree and echo both of their sentiments. I think let's take it from a different perspective. If you are a business owner, and let's say you own a restaurant and you've got 30 dishes that you sell, you know, if you have the ability to sell all 30 on a pretty regular basis, and every month you do a different special and you just kind of regenerate those things, you keep all 30 dishes. But what if you have two or three dishes that never sell a darn thing? And I know that's a really crude analogy, but it makes sense. At that point, as an owner, do you get rid of those dishes and focus on the ones that are selling a lot and try to increase those sales? Or do you try to bring new ones in and see if you can generate more business that way? And I think there's a lot of ADs that are, I mean, this is a business, right? We're in a business, and the business is to make money. I mean, it's not beat around the bush. But you're right, Dan. Universities are all backwards and upside down in terms of how they're viewing where their dollars are going and how they're generating more revenue. And you know, a lot of people have written some articles that respond with, if you want to make more money, bring more sports on, because the kids are paying full boat to go to the school. So if you're an enrollment driven program, there's nothing wrong with that. It almost stays afloat on its own, as long as you bring the right amount of people in every year. But I, the knee jerk part, absolutely. I agree with it. We barely got into the whole thing, and all of a sudden we're cutting things. And I think, you know, I think Dave or Dan said it before, that there might be some things behind the scenes that we're not aware of, that may have been already in the works. So this is just an excuse for them to be able to get rid of those things. But I'm not opposed to streamlining when you're not a program. And I use this in general terms, nothing specific. If you're not a program that is generating championships, you're having a hard time recruiting to the school, you're having a hard time filling out the roster, you're geographically not in a place that fits. Like, for example, if you play outdoor tennis in Maine in the middle of winter, I mean, is that really a fit that makes sense for your school? And so why not streamline those things to make it work a little bit better for your institution? But at the same time, you want students to have access to something that gives them a college experience. And so I'm torn between that one. But as a business owner, you got to streamline and make things work. So I kind of understand it to some degree.
Yeah. Well, next topic is our third negative Nancy topic of the day. Sorry, guys.
Way to go, Rob. Can't ever mix it up with good, bad.
Hey, this
good,
is bad. The feel-good episode of
a golf. Merry Christmas. Hey, how are you guys? I'm going to dump some stuff on you. Here you go. So,
merry ho, 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 whatever. Well, so obviously we're, you know, last that I got to see you guys was sometime before March 2020. So in person or even just online, we actually had a closeout episode of College Volleyball Weekly, but in person, hadn't seen yet. I think, Dan, I saw you in January when Lewis came out and played UC Irvine. And that was the last ball that I really got to see on the men's side. But COVID has taken the world by serious hold. We've had to make some major adaptations and changes. I wanted to ask you coaches about COVID impacts on your team's training. I mean, it's, we're going to talk about the schedules and if seasons are on in the next few topics, but what are you guys doing as coaches to keep your teams on point, ready to go and potentially not go if, you know, depending on the circumstances? And we'll start with Dan on this one.
Yeah. I don't know that I'm doing a good enough job. I'll tell you that, because there's just so much that's going on. Even for us, you know, we try to add in virtual workouts when we couldn't get together. We tried to add in film sessions, but at some point it's just tough. Like we started training and just got decimated. Half our team got it and they were shut down for 3 or 4 weeks. And then we tried to get after it a little bit more again. And, you know, we haven't got a lot done compared to years past. And there's no way around that. And usually we'd already be training right now. You know, what is it, December 27th or whatever, 8th, and, you know, we'd be going, and we were in Canada and last year, so, and, you know, I think we're coming back January 3rd, and then we got to re-socialize and get tested, and so it's just a whole different, and a lot of schools are the same. There's a few schools I've talked to that have got full training in the fall, and I'm like, really? And I'm like, so it's tough, you know, but it is what it is. And we tell the guys, you know, it's challenging, but we got to keep moving forward. I think even academic was tough because guys were totally online and, you know, and I have some guys who are great and they're good in the classroom and that doesn't change, but we have a handful of guys who really struggle and it was really difficult for them. I think to manage the online, we didn't have the same services in person that you did, whether it's tutoring or all that stuff. And so there were a lot of challenges with that and things that came up that we've tried to figure out, but probably want to do better as we go forward in terms of that. And so, I can list all the things that I want to do better that I'm trying to, I can tell you that, but I don't know. I think it's gonna be a tough year and we're just going to try to get a little bit better every time we're on the court and that's all we can control. So,
right. How about you, Jay?
Fortunately, we were in a completely different situation than Dan. We had fall practices. We had to ramp up slowly and do the whole individual with one kid on one court with one coach for a half hour. And, you know, we did those couple of weeks and then got to go to small groups and then small pods. And then all of a sudden we're a full team. And we had, I think, 3.5 weeks of full team practices. And we were lucky. We did not get hit with any positive tests on our team. And, you know, we got to look at what volleyball actually felt like. It was a little rusty at first, but you know, we got a chance. And, you know, I told my guys at the end of that, before they went off to the break, I said, you know, you got to do what a large portion of teams around the country didn't get to do this year. And I said, you should be thankful for that, because, you know, at the end of the day, we're all here for education. We're all here for each other, but you know, you got to play and see what it looks like, you know, at the collegiate level, especially for the younger guys. So, you know, my guys are now back in town. They're going through their mandatory quarantine, and we'll be starting up on the 4th. And luckily, you know, all things considered, if we go according to plan, we'll start practicing full team on the 4th, and we start our season, I think, with Ball State in the 22nd. So, you know, we're pretty excited about that. And even differently than Dan on the academic side, my guys actually did well. I don't think we were doing anything different than he was. I think it's just a different situation. And our guys felt that they were, you know, we tried to make a point to them that, you know, the teams that are going to be playing at the end of the year, you know, in the national championships are going to be the ones that not only have just a little bit of luck, you know, you gotta hope that you get a little lucky streak here and there, but it's the team that prepares as best they can. And even then you're not guaranteed. I mean, Dan, I'm sure, did every single thing he had to do to keep his team safe. And unfortunately, some randomness happened and you can't plan for that. I said, and that's the luck part. But as long as you're trying to do the right things and you give yourself an opportunity to have an opportunity, you know, those teams are going to be the ones that'll be standing hopefully at the end of the year. And and if we don't get that far, hey, we gave it a hell of a try. And that's all you can ask for. So we were not, I'm sure, doing anything different. We just got lucky and had a chance, and you know, we're just chomping at the bit like everybody else.
Yeah. And how about you, David? Especially in Malibu, yeah. Pepperdine. I mean, I know you guys finished the school year early. It's like a late April, but then you also came back earlier. I saw students posting on their they were back in town probably like late July. So how has training been for your guys?
Yeah, so we started back on campus. You know, certain people were allowed back on campus. You had to fill out a hardship waiver, I think it was. So some of our athletes had that hardship. Some of them didn't. So a group of our athletes got back in August. Our semester got actually bumped up. So we finished right before Thanksgiving, which I think some other schools had in the semester model have done that as well. We don't go back until February. So trying to miss that peak period of flu season or whatever it is, so we can try to avoid being sick. But we got a large portion of training in, and none of it looked like years past. I'd be shocked if it ever looks like, you know, what it used to look like. I think things have changed permanently now. But just seeing how happy the guys were when they were allowed to see each other. Yeah. Even if it was two courts away, or, you know, we started on the tennis court outside, you know, we set up a makeshift net, but, you know, the guys were so happy. I mean, they were diving on concrete, having a good old time because they were just happy to be playing volleyball. You know, in Southern California, there's not even beach nets that are up. You have to bring your own beach net now. And it's,
LA County cutting them all down in Hermosa and Manhattan.
Yeah. I mean, that was brutal. It was like a sad day, right? It was sort of like a movie where these people come through and take them all down. But it was just, I think it made the guys, not that in any program any guy is ever, you know, sort of in this mode of taking things for granted, but, you know, it just all of a sudden now being together, they valued that a little bit more. And I think we saw that when I talked to other coaches across the country, same thing. So we were able to get a large portion of training in. We actually ended, you know, 8 days ago, we went through our winter break, and then we're going to start up in a few days here again with the testing, the re-socializing and all of that stuff. So, you know, it's probably changed more for the athletes in their social life. You know, their friends aren't around. I'd be shocked if campuses allow students back on campus, or you have in-person classes, maybe you're out, you know, back 30-40%, but, training is a lot different, and it's probably gonna be like that for a long time.
Yeah. Well, it's a good segue into our next topic, which is, will the 2021 season be on? And what I want to do is do it around the horn, have you guys focus on your conferences, and then what I can gather, and I'll talk about the ones that aren't represented here, which are, well, I guess I would be Big West, but Conference Carolinas is on. That's simple enough. But I want to give a shout out to Vinny Lopes of Off the Block Blog and his crew, Brandon Johnson and Jonathan Bates, who have got all the stories up. They're keeping up with men's collegiate volleyball. They're doing a phenomenal job, even in this pandemic, keeping up with all the information. But Conference Carolina is on. A lot of the schools have their schedules on. Some are actually going to be visiting some EIVA schools, I noticed on one of them. So I'll tell you, the Conference Carolina is on. Big West is a question mark. If you were to ask me in August, it looked like they were pretty optimistic that it was a January 1, but that's since changed because all in the Big West, these like all the sports that should have gone in the fall have now officially been canceled for the year. So big question mark for me. It's saddening to hear that, but I'm just hoping for the best is all we can do in the Big West. So I'm going to go ahead and start with Jay on this one. What's going on in the EIVA?
Yeah, so we had meeting upon meeting upon meeting this fall, and we were kind of at the mercy of Princeton and Harvard and wondering what they were going to do. And so we all held off on our schedules. We had all made our schedules according. You know, obviously we were going to go out and we were going to see David this year. We were going to see Dan this year. We were going to see all kinds of people. And that all slowly got whittled down. And all of a sudden, we all had kind of skeleton schedules. And Princeton and Harvard were in the lurch because they didn't know what was going to happen. You know, Sam was discussing the fact that, you know, he was hopeful, but he wasn't holding his breath. And sure enough, you know, we all thought about, okay, if this is, let's come up with a couple of scenario doomsday scenarios. And if they're not going to do it, then here's going to be what our schedule looked like. And that unfortunately was the case. In the last second, it looked like the Ivy Leagues might pull out a Hail Mary, but it didn't happen that way. So we're all doing a double round robin. We're playing everybody in our conference twice at home. So for example, normally when we go to Penn State, we would play Penn State one night and St. Francis the other night. Now we're going to go up, we're going to play Penn State twice, and then we'll go back up to Pennsylvania in another trip and play St. Francis twice. And everybody will play at everybody's houses two nights in a row. We do have a couple of, that starts February 5th. From that point on, it's all conference. We're not going to have any free weekends in between to do anything else. We have enough matches scheduled there. And then in January, we've got a few teams coming in that we are allowed to have. It was a little dicey. We didn't know if anybody was going to be allowed outside of conference. It was mandatory, but we got a chance to do that. So we are a go. I'm super bummed for Sam. Now that's 2 years. And Brian at Harvard, that's basically two seasons that are going to be a wash. And I know the guys are going to be real disappointed as well because, you know, they were coming back and he had a pretty good looking team. And so I'm just super bummed for them because I know how much it means to them. But for the rest of us, seems that we're going to be going according to schedule. And hopefully, you know, like everybody else, we're just going to, you know, hope for the best and do what we have to do to adapt if there's any challenges.
Well, I got to ask a follow-up question here because when the pandemic first hit in early March, it seemed that the Ivy League schools were the first to shut everything down. Is there a likelihood that they could set a trend across the nation with these two schools?
Rob, don't be bringing that bad, juice in here. We're going forward. Did I hear it? We're going forward.
I'll be real honest with you. The Ivies are a completely different bird. I know they all have athletics. Don't get me wrong, but I'm not too sure that athletics is very high on their priority list of things they want to have happen every year. Yeah. The fact that they are willing to shut that down so fast, I don't think they've cut any programs. They're just like, hey, athletics is a backseat. You know, we want to be part of the curriculum and part of the college experience, but that's the backseat to who we are. And so I think, I don't think that's going to be the trend. I don't think anybody's looking at the Ivies going, well, if Princeton's doing it, then we should do it. I don't think that's the case at all. And I'd be real surprised if somebody, the Big Ten were to speak up and go, we're going to do what the Ivy Leagues are doing. I just don't think that's happening.
Just got to ask the follow-up question. let's go to Dan and what's happening in the MEVA there.
The MEVA is doing we changed our league play a little bit. Everybody's starting around the first weekend in February. And what we're doing is kind of an unbalanced home away thing in terms of like, I'm going to go to Ohio State and play them twice, but then Ohio State's not coming to me. So we mitigate a little bit of travel. Like typically I go to Ohio State and Ball State, but then the following weekend, Ball State comes to me and plays at my place twice. Mm-hmm. And so you get three opponents that you're at their place twice and three opponents that you're at home twice. And then you have your travel partner that you do home and away. So it was a little unbalanced, but they figured it out by overall mileage driven when they were doing it. And they tried to make it as equal as possible in terms of that. And it's a pretty decent model. I think I love the EVA's model with six teams if we had that, but we can't do that model with 18. It just doesn't work. It's too many matches. And so with our model, it works pretty well. We build a flex week halfway through that if something happens, we can reschedule on that week. And then we build a flex week at the end before the conference tournament. If something happens, you can build a makeup match at the end there. So we don't get quite as many matches maybe as the EVA, but you know, we still got our 14 league matches, which is great. And then you were allowed to schedule non-conference before league play started. But once league play started, you couldn't schedule any non-conference. So,
oh, wow.
Tentatively have four matches in January starting about the 20th, which is great. So we get a few games in before league play starts. So that's kind of where we're at. So we end up with 18 or 19 right now if we played them all. So I was glad that the NCAA said, hey, you only got to play 10. And then you can still qualify because you'll still have an opportunity at conference tournament as well to get a couple in if you're making it that far at the same time. And so,
yeah.
So I'm happy we got a schedule. We put it together. I mean, we were like, Jay, we were supposed to go to Hawaii and we were supposed to have some good teams come in, you know, from the West Coast, and was even trying to schedule Dave on the way to Hawaii. But unfortunately, none of that stuff gets to happen, but we're going to get to hopefully play volleyball and go after it a little bit. And I'm pretty sure there's going to be some things thrown at everyone as their season goes on with COVID. So, and it's going to be challenging at times. And so every time you get an opportunity to play a match, you'll be excited because there aren't going to be any fans at most places and you won't switch sides. And there'd be a lot of things different when you go to play these matches. And, and a lot of schools are leaning towards wearing masks when you play. And even that can be a difficult task at some times. You know what I mean? In terms of that. And so,
How about you, David, representing the MPSF?
Yeah, I mean, well, the first thing I want to sort of hit on is, Dan just mentioned it, if all of these matches happen, I think every conference has probably sat down and come up with a contingency plan. And really, so if our three teams are going to play, if we were all in the same conference, if Pepperdine gets sick, it's really affecting three teams. It's going to affect whoever I was supposed to play that week and then whoever I'm going to play next week, right? So now, potentially, I might lose four matches, but now I'm really affecting somebody else. So this idea of building in these bye weeks or building in weeks where you can reschedule and then trying to get more matches against more of your conference opponents, I think is a theme that you'll see continue. So the MPSF, we've changed what we wanted to do a few times. Our latest revision came 5 days ago, I think. So we decided to not do any non-conference matches. We're only doing conference matches. What the minimum number is, I don't know, because we've all decided if you can play and you can play a lot, then play. So we've decided that we want the minimum to be around 18. We're all shooting for 18, but you can play as many as you want. They're all going to be conference and they all count. So the conference winner might just be whoever was healthiest at the end and got the most matches in and won. So we sort of coined it the rat race because, you know, if you go, what is it, 20-8, you can win the conference and beat out someone that goes 18-0 because it'll be the overall winner will just go by wins to start. And then the first tiebreaker is going to be win percentage. Now, there was some debate because originally when the pandemic had hit, I think in May, we had voted to go down to a Final Four, just do a Final Four. For people that don't know, we had always done everybody gets in. When we have seven teams, the number one seed gets the bye, but they're hosting and all that. So we had voted to go to a Final Four, possibly, most likely in a predetermined location. But now with Stanford announcing that they were dropping and then coming up with, all right, well, then we'd have to figure out who determines if you play and what happens if you don't play the same amount of matches and all this. We just ultimately decided, let's go back to everybody gets in. We'll go a three-day format. Three matches in a row, and that's how we'll decide our conference winner. So in theory, it sounds like a lot of fun. It's going to be a lot of matches, which is good for these guys. And one of my comments was, why are we worried about rest? You know, these guys have rested for almost a year now. Let's just play a lot of matches and let's go. But it gets a little bit tricky going back to our first topic with Stanford, right? And John brings up some great points. When we were originally, our format was to play two at somebody's place or, two at ours. We have geographically, we're a little bit spread out with three teams because we have Stanford, GCU, and BYU. And for the Southern California teams, you could drive to two of the three. but it just is a long road trip. But Costi brought up, he goes, hey, you know, this is my last time playing at some of these places. I'd prefer to play at them and just do a home and away with everybody if possible. So, which is a little bit of a bummer to even think about. You know, in our last call, he brought up, he goes, hey, as of right now, I have 13 matches left in Stanford's program history. And he goes, I'm looking to play as many as I can. So, and then it got into, we're all starting around, I think the week that we will start play is the 23rd, but Stanford doesn't even go back until possibly the 23rd. So their schedule will be with fewer amount of matches. So we'll see.
Well, David, I'm surprised you haven't even mentioned the most obvious match that already happened. The BYU blue versus white match.
Oh yeah. 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 BYU. I mean, I think a lot of the MPSF schools had something that looked like a fall. A lot of us were doing, inter-squad or intra-squad scrimmages. BYU, I think, was able to put theirs on BYU TV, which I think is cool.
I'm sure none of you guys watched that.
I didn't peek in at all. But you talked about, is the 2021 season going to go? I think it's going to start for sure. Does it end? I don't know. I hope so. I think a lot is, you know, between now and then. But everyone's going to give it their best shot. That's for sure.
Yeah. Well, assuming it starts, what's the fan or lack of fan experience going to be like? Because, you know, I've been, in my desperation to watch volleyball, I've been following a lot of our USA athletes abroad, and they've been talking about their experiences in the arena. You know, for instance, in Latvia, you saw a beach event, no social distancing, full crowd, no masks. Then you've got Italy and Poland, Italy's no fans, Poland, I think it's like 25% capacity. And then Korea, which has a few American players. I saw a blog post by Stanford All-American. Is it Miretti Lutz? I guess she's in virology or epidemiology major at Masters from Stanford. And she wrote on the experience she had. They had close to 50% capacity. And she's impressed with the way the Korean, the leagues were handling the situation, that they had temperature scans, face masks, but they didn't necessarily have to social distance based on what I could see in the video feed. But she said that, you know, the way Korea's handled the pandemic has been great. Hearing that, I have an optimistic, you know, view of what could happen here in the United States. What do you think is going to happen here for 2021 for our volleyball fans in-house? We'll start with Dan, because we're in different regions. I need to say that for the podcast who are just listening.
Yeah.
So Dan's in Chicago, or in Illinois, Jay's in Virginia, and David is in California. So obviously most of the regions are represented. So what's happening with you, Dan?
Well, I just think the point where you called out another country and how well they handled it was underlying issue of everything. You know what I mean? So it's like every state's on a different page here. It certainly makes it difficult and challenging. And I think it makes it hard to get on the same page about what you want to do in terms of things like this, where we talk about fans and capacity. And so Chicago's on lockdown, especially like even more so Loyola downtown than we are, you know, in and out, all that stuff, travel. And so I don't think you're going to see any immediate fans allowed. I think the first step that you'll see is parents, you know, and like close family members or a student athlete would get like 3 or 4 that they could allow in terms of that. And so I could see that happening first around this area from that standpoint. And then I would guess, depending on the traction of the vaccine and where our numbers are at and things like that, then you might get to like a 25% capacity where they're letting students come in and participate in the game. But I don't think you'll see anything full capacity the entire year from that standpoint. I think even at the NCAA tournament, there'll probably be some type of capacity limit if we're in a good spot and things like that. And needed mask or things like that from that standpoint. So I just think we're too far behind to get where we were, would be at full capacity anywhere from that standpoint. You're not seeing that across any sport right now in terms of that. So
let's jump down to David here on the West Coast in California. Yeah. What do you think it's going to look like?
I mean, the Rose Bowl was just denied. They can't have the college football semi at the Rose Bowl because they wouldn't allow parents and, you know, just minimal fans. So they're not doing it for for that. I don't see men's volleyball, you know, jumping up the board and allowing fans, but
it's doing the big last basketball, men's basketball did. They're going to Vegas. Everyone's going to Vegas.
Yeah. The WCC had talked about that, right? Because you have the challenge of Gonzaga and BYU and you want to limit those flights. So I think it's probably more dangerous to put a bunch of people in Las Vegas, a bunch of young males, and let them roam around. That's probably worse. But I think for a fan experience, they should mic up Jay during the EIVA matches. Now, they probably got to have one of those dump buttons, right? Because you can't. But could you? I'd pay $10 a match to listen to Jay's commentary.
Wow. Hey, that's
Yeah, I mean, I don't make that much money, but $10 a match for a few select matches,
I would pay that.
So would I would pay that, and I've sat next to him multiple times, so I know it's going to go on. You know what I mean? Yeah.
If you even got the little glasses cam going, where it was like I could see what you're seeing, and then like blurt out whatever you blurted out, that would be good content. You do the Facebook Live stuff. Just do.
I love the confidence you guys have in me to not be able to curtail at least some of what I'm thinking.
No, that's the whole point is hopefully you wouldn't be able to, and that's what I'm paying my $10 for, right? It's like, that's what I'm paying my hard-earned money for.
You'd have to sign a waiver, A, that you would not share with my AD or anybody else, and B, that you understand there might be some colorful language that might...
AD doesn't know what you say,
That's what folders are for, to cover the mouth.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's a good point.
That's a fun fundraising idea for sure. Well, I'm assuming that goes to me now. So the Virginia, we're the same boat as everybody else. We're only allowing the parents of the players that are on our team. Visiting teams will not allow, and they were not allowing anybody from a visiting team that is not already on the travel roster to come into the gym. So that means no parents. And it's a real bummer because obviously at least if the parents were there, you know, you could at least let them, you know, ride out the season with everybody. But I think that's going to be the case with everybody, and everybody's school is a little bit different. Some schools require this, some schools require that. But I'll tell you where the advantage lies is in the visiting team, because you're no longer in hostile territory. And so places that maybe in years past you kind of lamented going to, because you're like, oh, it's just going to be this constant barrage of, you know, colorful language coming from the bench, and you know, maybe some of the young guys can't handle that yet because they're not experienced. Now you walk into that gym and it's even playing ground. So, and that takes away from the home team advantage for sure. So I think it's going to look obviously different, but I'll tell you what, I think men's volleyball, you know, we all kind of grew up knowing that our sport was not going to be in front of 150,000 people. It was going to be a random few here and there, but we didn't care. We just wanted to play. And I think it's going to be fun, and I'm sure hoping that everybody, you know, gives it the best shot, and we all get a chance to play, because we got 24 matches on our schedule this year, and that's a lot for a year where I think most people are struggling to get 18. So we're just hoping that we get a chance to play all 24 of them.
Yeah.
Well, Rob, one thing we didn't touch on, I don't know if this is for other leagues, but you know, not all our matches are going to be at the typical 7 o'clock. You know, I mean, we got a few 3 o'clock ones. We talked about playing at noon. With no fans in the stands, you know, we've discussed it should be more advantageous for travel schedules to get teams back. I don't know if that's what the other conferences have decided, but then how does it change for you, Rob? I mean, do you still announce the same? You still give it the same gusto, or what's up?
Yeah, well, you know, my side gig, so for those who don't know, I work at UC Irvine, and I'm the backup guy for the in-arena voice. So
you are never the backup, Rob.
No, for basketball, I am. But I mentioned that because the primary elected out of the season due to COVID. So I've worked 8 basketball games already, and it's an empty venue, and you could see them getting a feel for what works for the player. I guess the players just wanted that sense of normalcy of having the voice, the intros and all that, and having the fouls called and all that. So I think they'll try and go to the same format. They've even brought in canned voices or cheering. So you'll hear that. It sounds like a wind tunnel. And then they've paid a few people to say, hey, go Eaters, you know, everyone's our defense. So, you know, they're trying to create that experience. But for me, I don't even notice it because I'm not paying attention to the crowd. I'm more just focusing on the play, but I will tell you, I miss volleyball in a huge way. It's just a different beast. And I think it's like,
Sorry to interrupt. I have this image of you announcing kind of like the major leagues when there's like 14 people in the stand and the announcer's doing the play-by-play. He's like, is anybody even listening to me right now?
Euchre, Bob Euchre. Yeah, it's, you know, I'll have to say it is a different beast because my passion is volleyball, be it, you know, beach or indoor, men's or women's. I just feel a better flow with it. And the only time I really sense a crowd is in their excitement of watching the play. So, you know, and my connection to the personalities in the game, the people in the court, the athletes, the coaches, you know, the people you always see, because we know it's kind of a small community and you see these people everywhere. So I definitely don't feel the same for working other sports, but I mean, that's definitely one of the things that I miss about being in venue and seeing the people, which I'm sure you guys do also, because you know, it's a time we get to hang out and be together and talk shop. So, but we'll see, you know, with women's being delayed or canceled in the Big West, I'm just hoping that, you know, something similar doesn't happen for the men's season. So, but my guess is it's not. They've been training, they'll start training in January. And I'm looking forward to that in arena experience again, or even just see some ball. I've been staying up 2-3 in the morning to watch certain people's significant others on the screen play in bronze medal matches. I won't say whom. Watching the Polish and Italian leagues, you know, been in touch with Micah Christensen and TJ DeFalco, and just it's been good seeing those matches, and it just gives me hope to see that volleyball can just be played. So. I don't care if I get to be in the venue. I just want to see volleyball being played.
The real bummer, and I'm sure Dan and Dave will agree with this, is that we've all got these really good teams. And it's so sad that we're not going to be able to cross-pollinate conferences and see who all has really got, you know, the stuff this year to take it all. Because there's some good level volleyball, I'm sure, in those gyms being played right now. And you're just looking and going, God, if I could only travel and play somebody else of significance, it'd be a lot of fun.
And you know, that's going to be an interesting one for the NCAA committee, right? Is how do they decide? Do they pull a college football playoff and just say, hey, we're going eye test, which in a lot of ways would be better than maybe how they've done it in years past. But it's, I mean, I don't envy them because, yeah, now they have this challenge and you have this unique environment of you have a lot of veteran players. I think we know that men's players get better later in their career, right? I think we've talked about like 28 years old is when they start to peak and have these really good careers. So now you have almost everybody with the exception of a few with guys that came back, but then you can't just say, all right, we got older guys, therefore we're exponentially better or we're, you know, this much better, because now you have also the influx of really young guys that got better, right? So now you have the blend of these. So it'll be interesting, you know, in our conference, we have BYU who was playing really good volleyball last year. And I think they're going to continue to play really good volleyball, but how does a team like GCU that was really young, how do they mature and grow? Because it's not just, you know, all right, you know, we added these guys, therefore we're little layers, you know, guys can shoot up and have drastic changes. So that's the interesting part. And then, yeah, now we're going to play each other four times versus being able to go across country and test ourselves. So there's that challenge as well.
Well, my next question for you guys is, and I heard some of you mention it, but will there be an NCAA men's volleyball championship and how is that going to look like? And
I'll go ahead. We were on the ABCA head coaches call and Ethan was on there, Walker, who's the chair of that committee, and all the information given from him point towards us looking to have a championship. You know, they're still counting on 7 teams and Ohio State's the host, and they said they'd host all the rounds need be, including even that play-in game of the 7th seed. And so all that was good info to hear, and he's heard nothing different. And he said they all voted on the reduction of how many games you needed to be eligible for the postseason tournament play, and that one felt like that was a good thing too. And so, and I mean, those are all good positive things that we're hearing from his side, and though certainly that can change fast, but I don't think any of us want to work in that light. We're all working like, okay, all right, put together some type of season to put yourself in April, you know, May, that you're in a good spot. So
the target is still an early May NCAA championship then?
Columbus is hosting. They've already talked. It's everything. Yeah, that's still on track with all that and everything. So
it's wonderful.
And even on that same call, I think something else that was encouraging was Ethan talked about if Columbus can't do it, there's, you know, they have plans in place to do it in another site or find another site. or these backup plans versus Columbus is out, therefore it's canceled. So I thought all of that was, yeah, really promising.
In the Columbus area, they have backup venues in that area?
I think Ethan was referencing just if they have to go to, you know, like Dan had mentioned, all of those matches would be at one site potentially. And it, with seven teams, it's a little bit of a challenge because you have the play-in that Saturday. And right. then everyone goes to the site and plays the final six starting on the Tuesday, I think it is.
Yep. Yeah.
So all those matches would be at one location, which I think for testing and protocols makes it a lot easier. But he mentioned even if Ohio State is out or Columbus is out, you know, then how do we do those? He said there's backup plans for that. So that was just promising to hear that those things have been discussed and people have that organized.
Yep. Anything else to add, Jay?
No, I they both nailed it on the head, and I'm just, you know, we're just all kind of plugging along and just hoping that, you know, things kind of ease themselves out a little bit. I think as the vaccines start getting passed out, and I think as people, you know, maybe start to not be as upset about certain protocols and just going with the flow and being smart, I think we're going to be okay. So I just, you know, I just keep crossing my fingers and hoping that calmer heads prevail.
Now, I forgot to ask you this during your update for the EIVA, but is it your conference that's mandating the masks on the court then?
We are. And I actually was not in favor of that, but I also am only one voice. And I said, whatever the conference wants to do, I trust all of the coaches that are there. And it was part of a decision made to help ease with testing. I think it was allowing some schools to not test as often. And obviously there's some financial you know, complications that come with that. So, but we'll be fine. We'll practice and do what we got to do to prepare for it. And, you know, like we've been saying, just a chance to get out and play and have fun and do something, you know, that we love doing. I think, you know, we'll, if we got to wear Speedos and a tank top, we'll do what we got to do.
now I'm paying $20 a match to see Dan in a Speedo.
Yeah, as long as the coach is in the same outfit as the players, we're good. You know what I mean?
Could you imagine? We would lose money. I'd have to pay people to come back. No way. There's no, you've seen my wife's cooking. You know that I'm not
There's
exactly.
There's only one way to find out, Jay. Only one way.
Highest ratings in any volleyball match in U.S. history. George Mason match. Why is that?
Yeah. No, we're going to pass on that one.
So how about you guys in the MIVA and in the MPSF? Any on-court protocols for the players? Like masks and...
We're still trying to figure it out. We're still in the mode of figuring it out. Like we had a meeting right before Christmas. We have another meeting coming up next week. But some of that stuff I'd already mentioned, you know what I mean? Like we're not going to switch sides. And, you know, I think the mask thing is leaning towards we're going to have to wear masks. We're still trying to figure out testing protocols because with us, you got teams from four different conferences, the MAC, the Horizon, the GLVC. And so everybody's league testing protocol is a little bit different. So I think we're going to get a little tighter versus a little easier. Unfortunately, the NCAA said, hey, if you're wearing masks and you can just surveillance test, but I think our league's going to go, you know, either three antigen or one PCR test a week. And it's just kind of how the league's going to go. And everybody's going to have to kind of follow suit in terms of that, which I think everybody would do. They haven't made that executive decision yet. We're waiting to hear from the executive committee within our conference, you know, and so, but that's kind of where things are headed right now.
How about you in the MPSF, David?
Yeah, we're hashing that out still. Similar to the MIVA, we got three different conferences. Three different conferences, the Pac-12 being the main one that we got to deal with. So, I mean, right now, the testing protocol that we have in place is three PCR tests, five antigen tests a week per player. So that's eight tests. Start doing the math for those people that don't know, that's costing about $150,000 per team. Ooh. Yeah, that's a pretty penny for sure. That was part of the talk about going conference only. Pac-12 was being told, I think, you know, either directly or indirectly, you know, teams aren't following those protocols, you're not going to play them. So, but obviously as coaches, I mean, as a volleyball coach, I don't know anything about testing protocol. So that's up to our trainers and head trainers and all of them to figure that out. Exactly when do we need to test? Right. You know, what's redundant? You know, is it a week out of competition? So do we start in a few weeks? I don't know. But that's what's being discussed right now is 3 PCR tests and 5 antigen tests. Basically, an antigen test any day. We're going to have practice where guys are interacting with each other, which I'm not in anybody else's gym, but I would assume that any day we practice, we're all interacting with each other. So.
Yeah. Well, let's move into the more fun topics here. We're going to be optimistic, say, hey, we are going, and this is going to be an awesome 2021 season. Who are some of the top teams and players to look for? And well, let's do this popcorn style. The guys that you think about as we go along here, and we'll do like an around the horn thing. So just whoever wants to take a stab at the number one, go for it.
Angelo Mandolaris going to Ball State. That kid was pretty good, and it's a pretty good pickup for Ball State. So,
yeah, I'd say Gabby Fernandez at BYU. That team's going to be ridiculous. You know, they're already an older team for religious reasons, but now they get guys back even more, and he's even bigger, stronger, faster. So, and some of those guys have been playing overseas, and I think that brings me to the next one, which is Jimeno at NJIT. NJIT is loaded with foreign players that are just phenomenally good. So those are two teams that I would look at. I don't know if NJIT is national title ready yet, but they're going to beat a few teams this year. They're pretty good.
We're going to play NJIT too. I'm like, oh crap.
look out,
Jen, you know, you control your own schedule, right?
Yeah, but since I couldn't schedule you or, you know, somebody West Coast, I thought NJIT would be pretty good. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
They're going to be
real. I don't think my guys register in their brains, but I already told them. So I said, these guys are really, really good. So,
yep.
Yeah.
Don't sleep on that team.
Yeah. No, I think BYU in our conference is damn good. The team that we were going to play, but now no longer can play, Santa Barbara. You know, I think they were a veteran team last year. They just played really, really good volleyball for really long stretches of time. And I believe that they have all their guys or their main guys coming back. Maybe they lose their libero, but they're going to be another team. But I think those two teams start off real strong. And then, yeah, we'll see from there, at least on the West Coast.
Dan mentioned Ball State because of Mandolaris, but let's mention Lewis. Lewis is going to be a handful.
Wait. TJ Murray, we got it done. We always got to, David, we always have to say TJ Murray.
We're texting. Hey, you're on this thing, buddy. We talked about it again. So.
Yeah, Lewis is going to be a handful. And you know, anybody who walks into that gym knows, you know, it's a tiny little shoebox atmosphere of sorts, but it's a good place to play. Unfortunately, it won't be packed with their fans, but Lewis.
What about Jay's guys? He finally had 9 months to get healthy. Are they all healthy? Oh. Jay?
Team infirmary.
I mean, we walked in there to play him. They beat us last year. A guy sneezed and he was out for us.
Yeah, I think we lost 4 starters last year and played the teams that we did. But you know, listen, we're healthy and you know, the practices, the fun stuff is the practices looked really rusty at first, but as the weeks wore on, there were times that I would look at my assistant coaches and I'd look at them both and I'd say, hey, we're gonna roll up the balls and don't screw it up today. And just kind of let it go. Yeah. And it was a lot of fun. So we're healthy now, you know, knock on wood. We'll see if we can go through this.
Rob, you're talking a little bit about popcorn style, but the thing is so Hawaii's going to be good. They brought Gaspin back and Colton back. Irvine's going to be good. Static was, I mean, there's so many guys that came back on so many teams.
Yep.
And you could mention every one or two starters from about every single team, which makes the volleyball opportunity so phenomenal. But like Jay mentioned, there's no cross play from these teams until you get to the NCAA tournament. So it's like, you can see all it, but you're going to see within the conference, like
right.
Abe's conference, the MPSF is going to be great. The EVA is going to have some great matches. The Zolig's back at Loyola, who was out all last year, and they had a young group and he's back. You know what I mean? And so there's going to be a bunch of great matches in the MEVA, you know, and so in a bunch of Big West matches, if the league happens, that are going to be really good. And so I think, I can't even name all the players. We named the ones that were highlighted All-Americans because I remember doing the All-American list. And I would say, I think outside of George, everybody came back.
Yeah.
So, which is littered with 5th and 6th year guys. So,
yeah.
Well, what's fresh in my mind are two particular outside hitters, one from the Big West, the other from the MPSF. One is Kyle McCauley at UCSD, just because he had such a breakout season last year. And the kid is a banger. And then Camden Gianni at Grand Canyon. You know, obviously we're coming up on the anniversary of his open heart surgery now from 2 years ago. And I just love seeing what he's doing, and the boy can play. And he's definitely one of my highlights of the 2020 season for sure. So, and Matt's doing some good stuff out there. He's got some good pieces in place. So not that I don't like the Pepperdine guys at all, but you know, I didn't get to see you guys.
Rob, I agree with you. And GCU is a team that I think about when I think, hey, it's dangerous to fall into this trap of this team was good last year, therefore they will be just as good this year. You know, GCU went to Hawaii, I think, to start the year last year. They might have lost to Hawaii and to Harvard, but that was not an indication of where they were by the end of the season. I think they're only going to get better. Mm-hmm. They had a fall to train, you know, so you got to factor that in as well. You know, how many of these guys, you're talking about the foreign guys training, how many of these guys were able to train and get better? And I think you're going to see some teams, you know, quote unquote, jump, but it's not really a jump. It's just these teams got better, matured, had some young guys sort of develop a little bit over their season.
And Dan, I mean, hats off to the MEVA conference for the website. They actually had a preseason poll come out, and a preseason All-American. And Lewis got the most points for first place, six first place votes, 62 points, and Loyola at 43. But, I mean, I know you're a humble dude. You don't want to mention your guys. Coonan is a beast, and you got him coming back. You know, got Tyler Mitchum. I mean, you got to get some good stuff coming. The outlook's very good for Lewis.
Yeah, Coonan's great. I mean, having not just as a volleyball player, but he's a phenomenal leader. You know what I mean? He didn't know how much he wanted to step on toes because he was coming back for this sixth year. But I think once he got into it, he really couldn't shut it off. You know what I mean? And so, and the guys needed that. You know what I mean? The young guys see it, something they wouldn't normally see. And we've even seen Tyler Mitchum step into a leadership role, which has been phenomenal. Two guys that are certainly key pieces in our program being good and what we can do this year. So, but I don't know. There's a lot of unknowns. I'm like Jay. I just want to play volleyball, and we got some great pieces, so I'm excited about that. I mean, the next year we graduate, Coon, I'll be like, oh, no. But so I'm just happy he's coming in, you know what I mean? And we've got Tyler and TJ and Kevin Collins. I feel bad for Kevin. He didn't get to finish his year, and he's a phenomenal setter. And so he's going to, you know, he's got, you know, a great group of guys to come back with and train and go. And so, yeah, I mean, a lot of good volleyball, I think, in front of us if we get that opportunity. So I'm excited about that.
Yeah. And Jay, I actually get to look at a stat sheet with consistent Mason players as a starting rotation. So I'm like, who's this guy?
Literally rolling the dice and going, hey, this guy's good. Let's throw him in there and see if he can do it. So,
well, I saw your Craigslist ad last year looking for outside hitter at predominant university.
I was combing through the PE classes at Mason looking around going, hey, that kid looks pretty good. Let's go ask him if he can.
Hey, on a side note, Jay, congrats on getting the NCAA back at your place in a couple of years here. I think that's awesome.
That came out. So, I did not know that.
Yeah,
it came out the next 4 years or something. I don't know them all off the top of my head, but
when it all went down, the NCAA invited all the teams that were hosting spring championships were invited to rebid if they wanted for the next cycle, and RAD and administration were just so jazzed on doing it. They said absolutely, and they rebid him. We got 2023 back at our place, which is really exciting. And I think, you know, the right guys will be here at that time. We won't be young, and so that's good. And so we'll see what we go. But I'm real happy about that. The NCAA was real good in that.
Jay will have another tough travel non-conference schedule, as he had every non-conference match at home last year.
It was unreal. I mean, I think we had 22 home matches last year. And obviously, you know, this year and next year are going to be a little bit different than that. But, yeah, back in 23, again, everybody will want to come back out. It's, you know, it's one of the perks of hosting, as I'm sure you guys know. And,
sure.
And hopefully we put on a good show. And I think we got a little more time to prepare, so that's good. And, you know, we're hoping to put a few more matches in the big Eagle Bank Arena during the year, which is nice, too. Yeah. So.
I wanted to throw three random factoids out there and get your guys' response to them, because with a shortened season in 2020, we didn't really get an adequate assessment of how good teams were. And there have obviously been some changes. You know, for instance, like UCLA, Mads Kjær Jensen not coming back. That was their 6'8", 6'9", lefty setter who was a banger. You had Long Beach State finish the 2020 season with only one loss. I believe they're 10 or 11 and one, but I never got to see them. And I you know, it's not to say they're not a good program, but how are they going to be like? There are some other changes going around that we're going to see, but what do you anticipate these teams doing, these other teams that normally we would be talking about come postseason time? And even Pepperdine, I didn't get to see you guys play. So, you know, let's talk about the teams that are normally talked about. Oh, I forgot the third one, Loyola. They get Garrett Zolg back, I believe. Is that correct?
Yeah.
And yeah, I thought he was a phenomenal center.
Yeah.
So they got that team last year.
Yeah.
So they made that team better for sure. So, yeah.
So take a shot.
I'll go first here. I'll be honest with you. I was never terribly impressed with Mads Jensen. I think setting wise, he was a freshman and a little slow on his feet. I didn't think he was very fast, but he put up a serve that was absolutely one of the nastiest things I've ever seen. It was kind of a scud missile of sorts. And obviously he's 6'9", 6'10", lefty. And so when he's up there and he's front row, yeah, you got to worry about that. So, but I'll be honest, I think UCLA has actually got some better kids behind the scene, so to speak. The kids that are coming out this year, I think are going to be some real weapons for them. So I don't think that that's necessarily a big loss for UCLA. Jimma was the big loss for UCLA. That's an offensive weapon. I think that they're going to miss terribly.
Yep. Anyone else want to chime in on the unknowns, the uncertainties and the changes?
I think we should do a top five right now with all of us. Who's in your top five teams? Because I was going to go get the rankings off my wall because I don't remember. BYU was one. You know what I mean? But I would probably put BYU there. I'd probably put Santa Barbara. I know Long Beach was around there, but I'm not sure I'd put him there. Do you know what I mean? In terms of that, who else was there? Like, I know
five
or six. Anybody help me out with the other top five on that? Because I don't
A team, Lewis was up there.
Yeah.
I said we were five or six, but who was?
Hawaii was up there.
Santa Barbara, Long Beach.
Hawaii, San Diego, I think was six.
Yeah.
Because Grand Canyon peaked out at number six. Irvine was 7-8. And then, it's you guys at the five spot.
Yeah.
I think this year is going to be different.
Rob, talk about Irvine for me.
Everyone's coming back, which is a good thing. And Vornkamp, the freshman center, is going to have another year of experience under his belt. So well, it works to their benefit. At the Libro situation is the only question mark because they're bouncing between three players at Libro, JB Cam, Davis Lau, and I'm forgetting the last guy. But they also tried a few different pin hitters too with, it's still up in the air. But with Schneidmiller, Static, and Vornkamp back, they've got a pretty solid core back.
They got a pretty stud freshman as well.
Hey, that was my other question. Who are anybody know about the best new guy? Not for a guy coming back 6 years, but the best new guy on any team coming in right now?
Rob, I like the kid that's at Irvine. Obviously, I like all the kids that are at Pepperdine, but I like
Francisco Sonny.
Yeah, just I worked with him on that U19 team and just, he kept his wits about him in some international competition. He grew up in Italy. He's a really neat kid that I think understands volleyball at a pretty high level. And I think just his maturity and his attitude are set for him to have a good season for sure.
I got the pleasure of working with that kid. He played for our club last year and phenomenal family. And he's grown up an awful lot. I remember seeing him a few years ago, and he was a little bit of a chest thumper, but I think the international game, him playing at the international level for a couple of years and being able to train with Italy over the fall, you know, I think that's a huge eye-opening experience for him. And the kid has just grown up to be a real nice young man. And Irvine's real lucky to get that kid. Real nice guy. He'll be a beast of a player for him too. He looks an awful lot like Schneidmiller. I mean, they almost look like twins.
Yeah, I think when we get to February or so, or March, probably March better. Like, it'll be interesting to be like, who's the new young guy? Not like, hey, here's the guys coming back. We knew that we're going to make an impact, but who are the guys that it's like, wow, this guy really has helped this team take a step. You know what I mean? I think that'll be interesting. So,
hey, Rob,
Sorry
to cut you off. I think something is going to be unique about this season since teams are playing each other so often. You know, in the MIVA, you're playing back to backs. You know, in the EIVA, you're playing each team four times. Is that right, Jay? So I think coaching is playing a huge role in it, right? In terms of tactics, how do you set up against this team? How did they attack you? How are you going to attack them? So, I just think you're going to see a lot more sort of cat and mouse and some coaching decisions. Obviously, talent plays a large factor in all of that. You have to have enough talent, but I think coaching is going to play a huge role in the leagues where they're playing three, four, five times possibly.
Yeah, you have the ability to play somebody five times potentially in our league. And I think the other thing on top of that, Dave, is, you know, how does your team have the ability to remain passionate and fired up about playing the same team, especially if you've beaten them three or four times already? Yep. You know, and that's one of those things where, you know, as the season wears on, you know, if you're just, I'm just throw it out there, if you're lighting somebody up the first two times, then what do your third match? Do you throw in the backup guys to hopefully get their fires lit up, or, you know, do you leave the top guys in to think that they can hold up with it? But it's going to be, it's like you're kissing cousins, you know, you just kind of like, geez, I'm seeing this person again. Like when can I play somebody new?
Yeah. Well, I wanted to end our episode on a very positive note, but I wanted to see what your guys' top 2020 memory was, because I know there's some good stuff happening in your programs. But what would you pick out as your top memory of the 2020 season? I'll give you a second to think, because while you're thinking, I want to acknowledge a injury that David Hunt suffered at Pepperdine. He fell to a knee in front of a person by the name of Jordan Larson. And they formed the now, I guess what would be the Beckham Posh Spice couple of volleyball. So the super athlete is obviously Jordan, but
obviously, yeah.
David, definitely good looking guy, model status. So congratulations thanks on your engagement and your knee injury of dropping finally. And
thanks
with that.
Are we calling them Jaded? What are we calling them? What's is it Jordan? Oh. David? What are we going with?
Yeah, it could be the next topic next week or whatever.
Congratulations, by the way, though. It's very
thanks.
Cool.
Congrats,
Dave.
So now that I've thrown your train of thought out, what are your top memories of 2020? And we'll start with you.
Certainly beating Irvine at Irvine.
Dude, seriously?
Really, really good.
We were up 2-0, dude.
and it was in game five where Coonan just said, hey, I'm going to hit like seven bicks and crush you, Rob, and you're done, dude.
Well, Bouget actually did a lot that match too. And I was like, oh my gosh, they're both on fire and they're killing us. So thanks for that painful reopening of my wound.
No problem.
How are you, Jay?
You know, beating Pepperdine and USC are pretty cool, but I'll be honest with you. The reality for me, the best part about 2020, I got a couple kids on my team that when I recruited them, my first ever recruiting class, I said, look, I don't know if I'm going to get a chance to redshirt you. I think I got to use you. And throughout their careers, I always said, God, it would be so awesome to get them back for next year. And the ability for me to look at them in the summer and say, would you be willing to come back for a fifth year? And for them both to say yes, or all three of them actually to say yes, that was a fantastic moment for me and for the program to grow and learn from them. So that's probably my favorite moment, is getting a chance to get those guys back in my gym for a fifth year.
Awesome. And finally, our newest member of College Volleyball Weekly, David Hunt of Pepperdine University, top moment of 2020, besides the injury.
I got to say, I have to, even though it's been mentioned, I have to say getting engaged, because if Jordan listens and I don't say that, you know, I'm in the doghouse, me and Spud hanging out. So, all right. So this is sort of on topic, but off. I think the coolest thing for me, and for those people that don't know, when we go out and recruit, you know, Dan and Jay, I hang out with them, talk with them. There's no real secrets when we're out there watching. Usually if we're watching a court, yeah, you just look out there and the big 6'9" kid is the one that we're all watching, right? So there's no real secrets. So I think the one for me has been seeing how men's college coaches have come together. We have these meetings and it seems like everyone is putting some ego aside and just saying, all right, what's best for men's volleyball right now? And we were on, you know, our latest call, and there's some coaches that could have put up a fight. Hey, I don't want this. It's not best for my program. And every coach, it seems like they've just been all in just to do whatever's been best for our sport. So the best moment of 2020 has just been realizing or sort of reaffirming that we're in this with really good people. I think the bad people don't last too long in our sport. They sort of get pushed aside, and, you know, we're all competitive with each other, but when it comes down to it, I think just knowing that we're in it with good people is a nice feeling.
Yeah. Well, hey, it's a great way to end our preview to 2021 and our recap of 2020, but got from left to right and down. We got Jay Hosick of George Mason, Dan Friend of Lewis, and David Hunt of Pepperdine. Looking forward to this next season. I'm Rob on the mic with the Viral Volley Podcast with College Volleyball Weekly. Looking to get back together, gentlemen, and I appreciate your time today.
Yeah, thanks, Rob.
You boys.